Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
On a cultural crusade all across America, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth, and what a great day it is to take a detailed look at one of the greatest, most impassioned, most faithful conflicts of our time. It's a conflict that doesn't take place in the United States, but the United States is very directly involved. I'm talking about the conflict at the heart of the Middle East and its struggles, the conflict between Israel and her Arab neighbors. Usually on this show, we focus on issues directly involving America. Of course, this involves America. We'll talk about how and why as part of this very special show, a show trying to cut through all of the confusion, all of the controversy, all of the conflict involving this conflict as we take a look at why they fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. And of course, when you start trying to tell that story, you go very far back in time indeed. The Jewish relationship to the spot of land, and it really isn't very much land at all, the little spot of land that today is known as Israel, goes back to the forefather Abraham, who first came to that land, historians say, about 2000 BC, in other words, 4000 years ago. But Abraham didn't stay. I mean, he stayed, he wandered back and forth, he was a nomad. Eventually, his grandchildren and great-grandchildren went to Egypt. And what that meant was that a permanent Jewish presence in what is today Israel began when Moses led the Jews out of Egyptian slavery and Joshua conquered the Canaanites. It's all described in the Bible. Historians suggest that that happened about 1200 B.C. In other words, 3,200 years ago. But wait a minute, that's a very long history. The Palestinians, on their side, claim that they are descended from the Canaanites who Joshua displaced. And indeed, one of their early capitals of the Palestine Authority was in Jericho, one of those cities that Joshua conquered when he came into the land. The claims on this piece of real estate are extraordinary and they're ancient. And one of the things that is rather surprising about it is you'd think, given the level of intensity with which people have claimed this bit of land over the ages, over the millennia, that it was some kind of amazing garden spot. But those of you who have been to Israel, who have toured the Holy Land, understand that it isn't just physical beauty, it isn't productivity, it isn't any sort of blessed nature of water supply or greenery or anything like that that makes this land so special. It's the history associated with it. And after Joshua came in to the land and a Jewish commonwealth was established there, they usually date the establishment of the monarchy, the kings of Israel, in the 11th century B.C., under King Saul and then later King David and King Solomon, the construction of the temple in Jerusalem. All of this is occurring close to 1,000 years before Christ. And during a very, very long period of time, there clearly was, and there is no historical doubt about this at all. I mean, the archaeological evidence is there, the historical evidence is there, not only in the Bible, but as repeated by Greek and Roman historians and many others, that there was a flourishing Jewish commonwealth called Israel, called Judea. There were two kingdoms that split. And yes, the Jews were exiled originally in 586 B.C. when Jerusalem was conquered by the Babylonians. They came back less than 50 years later, rebuilt the temple 70 years later, and then continued to live on that spot of land for another more than 400 years until the Romans destroyed the second temple in 70 AD. And now you're talking about all kinds of very well-recorded history. The destruction of that second temple was only one generation, after the crucifixion of Jesus. And this is very well recorded. There are Roman statues about it. There's a famous Arch of Titus in Rome that shows the Roman troops taking home the artifacts from the temple. Even after the destruction of the Second Temple and the exile of the Jews, and this unimaginable disaster where most historians suggest that up to 1 million people, men, women, and children, were slaughtered, and the remaining population of the land, perhaps another 1 million, maybe even as many as 2 million, most of them were sold off into slavery and sent into exile. Because the Romans, having dealt with a horrible and very stubborn Jewish rebellion against Roman rule, didn't want to deal with that anymore. And they actually wanted to wipe out the Jewish identity of this land. Remember, Jews had lived here, had had a commonwealth here for more than 1,000 years. The Romans wanted to extinguish that. And so they changed the name of the Roman province. They changed the name from Judea, to Philistia, Palestine. Naming it after Palestina, it became in the Roman jargon. They named it after the Philistines, who had been the arch enemies of the Jewish people, of the Hebrew people. There weren't many Philistines left at the time, but it was a gesture that the Romans took very seriously, just like they took very seriously knocking down every scrap of the Holy Temple on the Temple Mount, and they actually sewed over the Temple Mount in salt so it would be desolate and nothing would grow there. Yet there remained in Israel a Jewish community forever. Despite the fact that people were exiled, despite the fact that they had undergone this tremendous disaster, which is observed to this day by Jews around the world with an annual fast day, the ninth day of the month of Av, which is the day that both of the great temples were destroyed. Despite all of that, there was a continual Jewish presence in the land of Israel. In fact, even after the destruction of the Second Temple, people kept streaming back and coming back and resettling. Large communities were reestablished in Jerusalem and in Tiberia and Tiberias by the 800s. And in the 11th century, in the 1000s, Jewish communities grew in Rafa, Gaza, Ashkelon, Jaffa, and Caesarea. So the idea that somehow the Jews had disappeared from their land, simply not true. Because even in the Middle Ages, when the population of the territory was overwhelmingly Arab, there was a very real Jewish presence. But what about the bulk of the population? Well, what had happened is under Roman rule, the population had been devastated. And when Rome became Christian, the official, and Rome also split into the Byzantine Empire, into the Eastern Empire and the Western Empire. Well, Israel was under the eastern part of the Roman Empire, and that Roman province, Palestine, was Christian. And they're not heavily Christian, because there were people who practiced all sorts of different local religions, and there was also a Jewish presence remaining there. But it was Christian until the 600s. And in the 600s, briefly, Persia came in, conquered the land from the Byzantines, from the Eastern Roman Empire. And then about 20 years later, that's all, after the Persians conquered it, the followers of Muhammad, the early Muslims, came in and conquered what was then the Roman, Eastern Roman province of Palestine, and made it Muslim. Now, one thing that's very important to understand is Muhammad never set foot in his life on anywhere on the territory of Israel. The whole association of Muhammad with Israel is he had a dream which is recorded in the Holy Quran. And the dream says he went to a distant province. And from that distant province, he departed to heaven in his dream. And they have identified by tradition, though it's not specified in the Quran, that that distant province was Jerusalem. And that was the site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the site of the Dome of the Rock in Jerusalem on the Temple Mount. But the name Jerusalem is never mentioned in the Holy Quran. But nevertheless, in the beginning of the 600s, early 600s, Israel began its years of Muslim domination. And did the Muslims, who then held the Holy Land, hold it consistently? Not quite. Did they use it as a capital in Jerusalem? Not quite. We'll continue the story coming up.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm excited to announce my new product, My Slippers. They took me over 2 years to develop because I didn't want just an ordinary slipper. My slippers are meant to be worn all day long, no matter what you're doing, whether you're inside or outside. My slippers come with an exclusive three-tier cushioning system that you won't find in any other slipper. It combines two layers of foam, including my proprietary My Pillow Foam, and a patented impact shell made from U.S. soybeans. My three-tier cushioning system is going to help relieve pressure points, provide that micro support you need for all-day comfort, and help prevent fatigue. Not only that, my slippers are made with high-quality leather and a premium indoor-outdoor sole that makes them extremely durable. I personally guarantee they're going to be the most comfortable slippers you'll ever own.
Call 800-320-6280 or MyPillow.com, promo code MedVet. That's 800-320-6280. Use the promo code MedVet for these great radio specials. To put it simply, materialism is the attempt to prove that human beings are merely meat in motion, that we have no free will, that we have no souls, that morality and religion are simply evolutionary artifacts programmed by nature for survival, and that our very thoughts and ideas can be fully explained by our brain chemistry. Darwin's theory of evolution made scientific atheism credible by offering a scientific explanation on how human beings could be generated through a blind process of random variation and natural selection. At discovery.org/MedVet, you can get a free mini book. Free! Darwin's Three Big Ideas That Impacted Humanity. It explores how three key concepts from Darwin undermine morality, religion, medicine, the criminal justice system, and the value of human life. Get your free book at discovery.org/MedVet. That's discovery.org/MedVet.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi, I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamGaday.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamGaday.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamGaday.com with Longevity. TeamGaday.com.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nanocolloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. I started fighting the IRS over 40 years ago when they tried to seize my mother's house. I sued the IRS and won. I beat the IRS then, and I've been beating them ever since. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I've helped thousands of people deal with tax problems they thought might never be solved. I can help you too. If you owe taxes you can't pay, don't wait another day. There's no such thing as a hopeless tax case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com, danpilla.com.
On this very special broadcast, trying to do the almost impossible, which is to make some sense and give you some clarity concerning the story of the Arab-Israeli conflict, why they fight. We were talking right before the break about the Muslim takeover of Jerusalem, which was in 637 A.D. It was just 5 years after the great prophet Muhammad died. And at this moment, you have to understand the tremendous explosion of energy and creativity and genius, and that's really the only word for it, that was associated with the Muslim conquests that were sweeping everything in front of them. The truth of the matter is that for the first time, the Arab peoples were expanding the borders of their control, and they marched into Jerusalem, they marched into Israel, and made it part of their empire. And it was a glittering empire. There's no question at all that at the time of the great glory of the Arab Caliphate, of the Arab Empire centered in the Middle East, centered in Baghdad and Damascus, after leaving the old home of the Muslim religion in Mecca and Medina in Saudi Arabia, the tremendous status of this civilization made it far more advanced than anything that was going on in the West in terms of science, architecture, poetry, just general level of civilization, livability for the people who lived in that civilization. And this is very, very important to keep in mind, because this memory of the great glory of the early years of Muslim civilization is very much alive in the minds of so many, many Muslim people today, very much including Osama bin Laden. But the interesting point about their taking over Jerusalem and their taking over the land of Israel was they never made it a separate land. It was always just part of the Ummah, part of the Muslim world. And here's something else that's fascinating. Though Jerusalem was undoubtedly important to the Muslims, and they built a mosque there, and then they built another mosque there, important mosques. In fact, the story is that they asked Jewish shepherd boys who were left in Jerusalem where the site of the old temple was, because they wanted to put the mosque right there on top of the site of the old Jewish temple, and they did pretty close. So that has created all kinds of difficulties down to the present day. But they built these mosques, and they built it up, but they never used Jerusalem ever. During all the years of Muslim occupancy of the land of Israel, never did they make Jerusalem even a provincial capital. Baghdad was a capital. Damascus was a capital. Istanbul was a capital when the Ottoman Empire took over, the Muslim Ottoman Empire took over in 1517. Jerusalem never was. Jerusalem was always something of a backwater. It was not only not a world capital, it wasn't even a capital of a separate province. And this is one of those things that is, it's absolutely true. You can check it. It is very, very uncomfortable to say because it's politically incorrect. But it needs to be said. There never, ever was a separate country in the area of Israel other than the ancient Jewish kingdom of Israel and the modern Jewish nation of Israel. In all that intervening time, when the Jewish people were in exile, what was the land of Israel, just geographically, was part of the Roman Empire, then it was part of the Byzantine Empire, the Eastern Roman Empire, then for 20 years it was part of the Persian Empire, then after that it was part of the Arab Empire, then the Ottoman Turks took over in 1517, and then after World War I the British took over. But at no time was there an independent, self-governing, separate state other than just a backward province of some other empire. At no time until the modern state of Israel came into existence in 1948. And the idea that there was a nation of Palestine and that it was glorious and that it was important is simply not true. And how do we know that? Let me cite you the statement of an Arab American historian, very distinguished guy. He taught at Princeton University, Professor Philip Heaty, who spoke to an Anglo-American committee in 1946, and he said, there is no such thing as Palestine in history. Absolutely not. In fact, Palestine is never explicitly mentioned in the Quran. Rather, it is called simply the Holy Land. And this was very much the attitude even of most Arabs who lived in that area. They did not see themselves until much later as Palestinians with some kind of separate identity. They were just Arabs. They were Muslims. They were part of this world group that was very important. For instance, when the first Congress of the Muslim Christian Association met in Jerusalem in February of 1919 to choose Palestinian representatives for the Paris Peace Conference at the end of World War I, they adopted the following resolution, quote, "We consider Palestine as part of Arab Syria, as it has never been separated from it at any time. We are connected with it by national, religious, linguistic, natural, economic, and geographical bonds." The idea of a separate nation of Palestine, a separate Arab nation of Palestine, didn't really begin to be taken seriously until 1967, after the Six-Day War. But we will get to that. The important thing here is, what about the Jewish people who had once lived in the land of Israel, and who still lived in the land of Israel in fairly substantial numbers? From 1800 on, there was a Jewish majority, for instance, in the city of Jerusalem, even though the population of the city of Jerusalem was pathetic. You know, in 1844, they took a census. The Turks ran Jerusalem. You know what the population of that city was? It was 15,000. 15,000. Majority Jewish. But you're talking about a very, very backward, out-of-the-way province and a very out-of-the-way city in terms of the city of Jerusalem. Jews scattered all over the world after the destruction of the Second Temple. There was another revolt by Jews remaining in the land of Israel, the revolt of Shimon bar Kochba, who was a pretender, a false messiah, and that was crushed in 135 A.D., and further Jews were distributed all around the world. And they were everywhere, really, in Eastern Europe and Western Europe, very much in Spain and North Africa. And yet Jewish people remained focused on the land of Israel. In prayers every day, three times a day, morning, afternoon, and evening prayers, religious Jews to this day remember Jerusalem and ask for a return to Jerusalem and a reestablishment of a Jewish nation there. Though it's probably only in the very recent years, the last 100 years or so, that people have begun to believe that their own actions could begin to make some of those prayers come true and to be answered. We'll talk about some of those actions that enabled those answered prayers as soon as we come back.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us. That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Powerful storms and life-threatening flash floods are endangering people along the Gulf Coast. The National Weather Service has put out a hazardous weather outlook for parts of Arkansas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas all week. The Weather Service also issuing a flash flood emergency in Lake Charles, Louisiana, where some reported up to a foot of rain Monday. Houses and streets are flooded and cars are stranded as rainfall totals are expected to reach the threshold for a 100-year event. After getting a tour of a Ford electric vehicle facility in Dearborn, Michigan, President Biden is pushing his new infrastructure plan.
Our infrastructure is ranked like 38 in the world. This is the United States of America, for God's sake. We're going to put Americans to work modernizing our roads, our highways, our ports, our airports, rails, and transit systems.
USA Radio News.
Join me, George Norrie, for Contact in the Desert Worldwide Virtual UFO Conference, June 25th to the 28th. Contact in the Desert will be an epic weekend of exploration into UFOs, ancient alien civilizations, consciousness, AI, crop circles, and cutting-edge science. More than 130 presentations, 67 speakers, and 2 extra weeks to view our extraordinary lineup. Get your tickets today at contactinthedesert.com. It's time to make contact. Contactinthedesert.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Hello?
Congratulations.
For what?
For losing all that weight. How'd you do it so fast?
ASAP.
ASAP what? What's that mean?
Are you ready to get as skinny as possible, as soon as possible, as simple as possible, and as sexy as possible?
I'm listening.
Then get with the ASAP program. It's real and it works. No smooth talk, no slick advertising, and no exaggerated claims of success.
I've got to know more.
Welcome to ASAP, as slim as possible. Whether you have 10, 20, or 50 pounds to lose, ASAP is your weight loss answer. ASAP targets the abnormal fat reserves and makes them available to be burned as fuel and contains no caffeine or hormones. Order ASAP at wholesale prices or join the team to share the business with others. Visit GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Lose weight and look great with ASAP, as slim as possible.
On this special edition of the Michael Medved Show, we're trying to cut through all of the propaganda and the shouting about the Middle East with some truth and clarity on this special show, Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. What was Israel like, say, in the 1800s, when it was a remote province of the Ottoman Empire, with a poor but stubbornly committed Jewish community, centered in Jerusalem and a number of other towns, and with a Muslim population of about 250,000 people total living in the land in 1882, in the census that was taken then, making it one of the most underpopulated, one of the most desolate, one of the most remote provinces of the whole Ottoman Empire. Well, you know, we have a very good idea of what Israel was like at that time, because there were lots of Christian visitors who, taking advantage of the fact that you could take ships and trains and eventually get there, made a point of trying to look at this land in which Jesus Christ himself once walked. And one of those visitors who came to the land of Israel in 1867 was Mark Twain. And you can read his descriptions of traveling through the land of Israel, through the Holy Land at that time. And he was just appalled at the dirt and the squalor and how desolate the land was. For instance, he describes it as, quote, a desolate country whose soil is rich enough, but is given over wholly to weeds, a silent, mournful expanse. A desolation is here that not even imagination can grace with a pomp of life and action. We never saw a human being on the whole route. There was hardly a tree or a shrub anywhere. Even the olive and the cactus, those fast friends of the worthless soil, had almost deserted the country. Unquote. The poverty was also extraordinary. What existed at the time for the majority of the Arab residents of the Holy Land was, well, they were basically tenant farmers. They were called fellahin, very impoverished people who worked for a few very wealthy absentee landholders. And they farmed, struggled, in using the same techniques that had been used for hundreds and hundreds of years. Part of the problem, of course, was this was all under Turkish administration. Turkey, by the 1800s, was known as the sick man of Europe. It was a collapsing country with more and more provinces of the Ottoman Empire, which had reached its peak in about the 1600s. More and more provinces of the Ottoman Empire breaking away and falling apart, basically. Finally, the entire Ottoman Empire collapsed during World War I when it was fought alongside the Germans. But one of the problems was you could pretty much get anything you wanted in the Turkish Empire, in the Ottoman Empire, by paying bakshish, bribes. And this interested a number of dreamers, originally some very religious dreamers, and then later some secular Jewish dreamers who, beginning in the 1800s, really thought that rather than just these sporadic, inspired religious people going back to reconnect with the land of Israel, why don't we create some organized settlements? And those organized settlements really began before Zionism was an organized movement. Settlements like Rishon LeZion, that means the first of Zion, or Petach Tikva, which means the gate of hope. And that kind of settlement began to spring up with people largely from Russia and Poland and Eastern Europe who had this dream of redeeming the land. One of them was a guy named Vladimir Dubno, who took the name Zev Dubno. And on the 21st of September, 1882, he wrote to his brother Simon. And this guy, Zev Dubno, was at an agricultural settlement in this desolate land of Israel. And he wrote, "Do you really think that my sole in motivation in coming here is to better myself? My ultimate aim, like that of many others, is greater, broader, incomprehensible but not unattainable. The final goal is eventually to gain control of Palestine and to restore to the Jewish people the political independence of which it has been deprived for 2,000 years. Don't laugh, this is no illusion. The means for realizing this goal is at hand. The founding of settlements in the country, based on agriculture and crafts, the establishment and gradual expansion of all sorts of factories, and brief to make an effort so that all the land, all the industry, will be in Jewish hands. Here I too am plunging into conjecture. Then the glorious day will dawn of which Isaiah prophesied in his burning and poetic utterances. The Jews will proclaim in a loud voice, and if necessary with arms in their hands, that they are masters of their ancient homeland. It doesn't matter whether that glorious day comes in another 50 years or more. 50 years are but a moment for such an enterprise. Agree, my friend, that this is a sublime and magnificent idea." We'll tell you what happened to his prophecy, coming right back.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. As the nation struggles with our legacy of racism and inequality, many well-intentioned Americans embrace lies about white privilege, the idea that people of European ancestry enjoy vast advantages based solely on their ongoing oppression of all people of color. But many measures of well-being contradict this simplistic theory. Most recent numbers show white life expectancy declining, while Asian American people can expect to live a full 8 years longer. And Latino children will live on average 4 years longer than whites. Suicide in America claims twice as many lives as murder, and white people have the highest suicide rates, almost double those of black people. The largest number of crime victims, welfare recipients, drug deaths, and most other measures of misery are white. This doesn't mean black families don't suffer from intolerable race-based inequalities that must be overcome. But it's no solution to focus on purported white privilege that actually doesn't exist. I'm Michael Medved.
On this special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show, Why They Fight, the story of the Arab-Israeli struggle. That remarkable letter by Zev Dubno, who had gone from Eastern Europe to work at an agricultural settlement in Israel in the 1880s and wrote to his brother Simon, saying, 50 years are but a moment for such an enterprise. Agree, my friend, that this is a sublime and magnificent idea. Actually, he was wrong only by a little bit. 65 years after he wrote that letter, there was a new state of Israel that had been created. And by the way, the brother to whom he wrote the letter became a distinguished Jewish historian, Simon Dubno, who believed that the real role of the Jewish people would always be in exile, not in the land of Israel. And he was murdered by the Nazis when he was in his 80s. But meanwhile, these struggling settlements, when you read the story of some of these settlements, and when I say settlements, they weren't taking anyone's land. They bought, purchased, at top dollar, the land from absentee landlords where nothing had grown and nothing could grow. Very often there were malarial swamps there, there was no water. In this one little town, this town known as Rishon LeZion, which later became eventually the center of the new Israeli wine industry because they could grow grapes there. Carmel Winery grew up there. But in that little settlement, there were 10 Jews from Russia who came and tried to get it going. And they had a terrible time, and they had to get special help from abroad and get the wells dug and survive. And finally, as it looked like their settlement was going to survive, there was a Romanian Jewish poet named Naftali Herzimber who came to the town and read to them with much ceremony a new poem that he had written to honor this town of Rishon LeZion, the first of Zion. And that new poem set to music by another immigrant in the town named Samuel Cohen, who had immigrated from Moldavia 4 years earlier, that poem set to music became, ultimately, the Israeli national anthem, HaTikva, or The Hope. We'll continue the story coming up.
You're listening to a Best of the Michael Medved Show. For complete show archives, go to michaelmedved.com and consider becoming a Medhead. It's all at michaelmedved.com. Click on the Medhead banner today.
Many people own coins that have not performed as well as they had hoped they would, but markets change and you should get a new valuation. Maybe the coins have done better with current moves in precious metals, or maybe you want to do something else with that money. Let me tell you about my friend Nick Drovich. He's the owner of AmFed Coin and Bullion. For over 40 years, Nick has built a reputation for trust, honesty, and his goal is to earn your business for life. He won't push you to sell, but when you're ready, he offers the best prices, trades, and consignment deals in America. Right now, Nick and the AmFed team are offering their exclusive coin performance review totally free. Yes, totally free with a no-pressure guarantee from Nick. Go online at AmericanFederal.com or call 800-221-7694. That's AmericanFederal.com and 800-221-7694. 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com. Why be held back by pain and difficulty and soreness and stiffness when Relief Factor is available and available so readily? You have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. It's just $19.95 for a 3-week quick start, which can reduce the inflammation, it can reduce the pain, it can reduce the soreness and stiffness and make you feel better. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for Relief Factor, michaelmedved.com, find the banner for Relief Factor. From Discovery Institute, a special free mini book offer for Medved listeners. What did Charles Darwin's ideas mean for society at large? Do we have free will? Are human beings merely meat in motion? Ideas do have consequences, and Darwin's ideas made scientific atheism credible. Get the free mini book, Darwin's Three Big Ideas, at discovery.org/Medved. That's discovery.org/Medved.
Hey everybody, if you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing, we've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with the high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
If there's a sudden disaster and you can't get to the grocery store or they're all out of food, what would you do? You'll wish you had emergency food to get you through the crisis. And that's why we're here. We're MyPatriotSupply.com, America's leading source of emergency food. Our food lasts for up to 25 years, and millions of families trust us for their disaster survival. Won't you join us? Unlike other food companies, we don't skimp on calories. Our meals give you more than 2,000 calories per day. Why? Because that's what you need to survive any challenging crisis. And right now, you can save $50 on our popular 4-week emergency food kit. Just go to MyPatriotSupply.com and place your order. We ship fast, 2 to 3 days max, and your food arrives discreetly right to your door. So order today and save $50 at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
You're listening to a best of the Michael Medved Show.
That poem set to music became, ultimately, the Israeli national anthem, HaTikvah, or The Hope. What the words mean is, as long as deep in the heart the soul of a Jew yearns, and towards the east an eye looks to Zion, our hope is not yet lost, the hope of 2,000 years, to be a free people in our land, the land of Zion and Jerusalem. Interestingly enough, Naftali Hertz Imber, who wrote that poem, and it later just was a sensation, became the theme song for the whole Zionist movement, he later, well, became a self-destructive drunk and made a fool of himself coming to Zionist conferences, and they eventually banned him and tried to throw him out. And at one point, it was recorded that he was banging on the door. He said, "You may get rid of me, but you will be singing my song forever." And that's actually been the case. This term Zionist, which began to be used in the later 1800s, needs a bit of explanation. Because the way it's used today in a lot of political discourse, somebody says that if you're a Zionist, it means that you think the Jewish people are better than all other people. The UN, with the leadership of the Soviet Union, the old Soviet bloc, and the so-called non-aligned bloc, and the Arab nations, passed a resolution that said Zionism is racism. And then later, years later, they took that resolution back. Zionism is not about race at all. Zionism means simply the belief that there should be a Jewish homeland, and basically the Jews should consider being part of that Jewish homeland. And this idea was percolating throughout Europe and percolating in a very serious way by the last years of the 19th century. There are a couple of reasons for it. One of the reasons is that was a time of great emerging nationalism everywhere. Remember, it was only in 1870 that for the first time you have German nationalism. You have for the first time Germany, all the different provinces and principalities of Germany fuse into one German nation. That nationalism is new and fresh. Italian nationalism, the creation of United Italy for the first time, and all kinds of other nationalisms taking place in Europe. Czech nationalism, Bohemian nationalism, Czech nationalism, and many others in Finland, all over the world. The Jewish nationalism, the feeling that we should have a home of our own, that was part of that same phenomenon. But there was another reason for it. which is that only in the 19th century, only after Napoleon, did Jews in most countries of Europe begin to have civil rights, the rights to own property, the rights to vote, the rights to participate fully, because of the very, very long history of European anti-Semitism. And what had happened by the end of the 1800s is that people realized that even with all those rights, even with increasing prosperity, at least for the Jews of Western Europe, that it was still a very, very long way from equality. And one event that helped to focus that was the Dreyfus trial in France, where an officer of the French army was scapegoated for the French defeat to the Germans and really falsely accused, and became a huge sensation in France. And he was scapegoated because he was Jewish. He was an officer in the army. One of the people who covered that trial was a Hungarian-born, Budapest-born, Viennese playwright and critic. Yeah, he was a drama critic named Theodor Herzl. What a remarkable man. Very full of himself, very arrogant, very handsome. I mean, you look at the photographs and you just can't believe this guy. Long, full beard, glaring eyes, absolutely charismatic and riveting. And he was so moved by the Dreyfus trial, he had never really taken his own Jewish identity seriously, that he became caught up with this idea of the need for a Jewish homeland. And he wrote a book. And it ended up being one of the most persuasive and influential books in all of history. It was a book called The Jewish State, in which he outlined his view of not some kind of long-term dream, but his view that by acting together and acting with purpose, the Jewish people could rebuild the Jewish state in the land of Israel within their own lifetime. What happened to that book and that dream will bring you up to date.
This is Michael Medved at michaelmedved.com for Town Hall. Angry protesters want to turn public sentiment against the police, but their ugly tactics remind all sane observers how much we need the cops. Rioting, looting, arson, Molotov cocktails, graffiti, and vandalism show how vulnerable all citizens would be without the courage of police officers who put their lives on the line every day. Sure, you can find examples of bad or poorly trained cops, but they're far more rare in police ranks than are violent criminal elements in the ranks of the demonstrators. In a difficult moment, a time when Americans can't decide whether to emphasize economic recovery or continued precautions against COVID-19, the nationwide rioting harms both hopes. Literally, thousands of already struggling businesses have been badly damaged, while assembling super spreader, densely packed crowds will only generate new spikes in the spread of the virus. No wonder most Americans love and value our police officers, without whom decent lives and livable cities could not exist. I'm Michael Medved. Special broadcast of the Michael Medved Show on the story of the Arab-Israeli conflict, why they fight. I'm talking about the beginnings of the organized Zionist movement. The first Zionist conference after Theodor Herzl's book, The Jewish State, had been a worldwide sensation. There were Jews from throughout the world, particularly from Eastern Europe, where in Russia and elsewhere Jews were terribly oppressed and poor and powerless. They were thrilled with someone like Herzl, who was wealthy, prominent, a bon vivant, a cultured Germanic Jew, and very much a part of the West, who had now embraced his own people and had embraced this feverish dream of creating a new Jewish state. And he helped summon the world's first Zionist conference, the first worldwide conference of people who shared his dream, and it met in Switzerland, in Basel, in 1897. But to give you some idea of who Herzl really was, he wasn't just content with trying to liberate Jews and to build a Jewish state. He also wrote in his diary,
There is still one other question arising out of the disaster of nations, which remains unsolved to this day, and whose profound tragedy only a Jew can comprehend. This is the African question. Just call to mind all those terrible episodes of the slave trade, of human beings who, merely because they were black, were stolen like cattle, taken prisoner, captured and sold, their children grew up in strange lands, the objects of contempt and hostility because their complexions were different. I am not ashamed to say, he wrote, though I may expose myself to ridicule for saying so, that once I have witnessed the redemption of the Jews, my people, I wish also to assist in the redemption of the Africans. Unfortunately, Theodor Herzl, who was thoroughly full of himself and a remarkably gifted individual, never got around to the redemption of the Africans. He died at age 44, having exhausted himself in meetings all around the world, trying to talk to heads of state, to leaders, to try to give them his vision, his Zionist vision, of a new, revived Jewish state. A solution, as he put it, to the Jewish problem, which many leaders of Western and particularly Eastern Europe felt that they had. One of the early slogans of that Zionist movement was a land without a people for a people without a land. The idea being the Jewish people had no land, and the land of Israel at the time, Palestine, had no people. The truth is, though, it did have people. Arab people, Jewish settlers, a small number, a larger number of Arab people who didn't see themselves and didn't see Palestine as a land without a people. The conflict we will continue to describe coming head to head. If you want a copy of this tape in its entirety or any of our other history tapes, you can get that. You can get that history tape from Tree Farm Communications by calling 800-468-0464. With this jam-packed information and storytelling about the Arab-Israeli conflict and its origins, a very relevant story, an important story, to all people around the world, and particularly to the greatest nation on God's green earth, upward and onward.
When you become a Medhead at MichaelMedved.com, you get access to years and years of our previous shows, hundreds of Michael's commentaries, movie reviews, exclusive podcasts, and more. And it's also just a great way to support the show. Go to MichaelMedved.com, click on the Medhead banner, and subscribe today. Use the promo code SPRING40 for a special discount.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing, and you always need to be sticking your fingers. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. You simply apply a discreet, easy-to-use sensor on your body, and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger pricks. If you test your blood sugar at least 4 times per day and inject insulin at least 3 times per day, or use an insulin pump and have private insurance or Medicare, you might be eligible for a CGM with little or no cost to you. Call U.S. Medical Supply today for a free benefits check. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill Medicare or your insurance directly. Call now and say goodbye to finger pricks.
800-633-1378. 800-633-1378. 800-633-1378. That's 800-633-1378.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.